Joffrey, when your enemies defy you, you must serve them steel and fire. When they go to their knees, however, you must help them back to their feet. Elsewise, no man will ever bend the knee to you. Any man who must say, I am the king, is no true king at all.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, Card Game DB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
Guys, we have a special treat for you this week. We have the best second place player in the world and a real first place player. I am the king.
And a man who doesn't need anyone to declare him as king because other folks online did it for him. So, way to be, Seth.
Well, I won Red Saturday before. It was cool, Aaron.
Well, I mean, with Aaron winning, it's debatable whether it's cool, but...
He ruined my win.
Props to Aaron, though. We definitely want to congratulate him on his victory over the weekend.
Sure, but real props. Hey, welcome aboard. This is Seth Lowe, who likes Old World's Weekend.
Thanks, me and Ryan Jones.
Yep. You guys were right there neck and neck all weekend long.
You know, if you had a beard, you would have won the world, Seth.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. And Tommy, you were just saying, we didn't get a chance to chat too much.
Yeah, it sucked. We'll definitely catch up at Gen Con or whatever it is.
I thought you were mad at me over the whole... unpleasantness online from a few months prior. I thought you were, like, giving me the cold shoulder.
Oh, no, I'm the least online person in the world. You can ask both of these guys. I have zero online presence.
You came on and you said, some people talk about how good a community this is, but then they do things that divide the community. And I assumed you were talking about me, but now I know you were talking about
me. No. That was not about you at all, man.
It might have been about you.
Not at all.
But that's not why I'm here to talk about Red Saturday. I want to hear about, this is how we're going to learn how to play 2.0. We're going to get the information out of Aaron. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
We're headed that direction. But I think before we delve into that, I think we had some pressing community news.
Wait, are you going to introduce yourself, guy who keeps talking?
You know, by now, if people haven't registered that I am the only consistent voice on this show.
He's got business cards.
Yeah, I actually have business cards for the White Book. I'm Will, also known as Kenan, wherever the internet is found. And this is my island. I own it.
Yeah, and I'm totally still Tommy.
We introduced ourselves, so now we can get our news.
Okay, so pressing news. FFG threw up another preview article out here, and this is not just another one of those 8-month out-ahead chapter pack previews that just drive people crazy because the cards won't be here forever. Instead, this is going to be the first deluxe box to drive everyone crazy because the cards won't be here forever. But, interesting note, skipping way ahead to the bottom of the article here before we kind of delve into some of the other bits and pieces of it. But they're springing the news on us that this is going to come out in the middle of the cycle instead of waiting for the gap in between. So we're going to get this after the fourth pack. Did I understand that right?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like to me.
implications.
Yeah, they claim second quarter of 2016 in the article. So FFG Quarters puts this roughly Gen Con next year. So
yes.
Have fun looking forward to the cards.
So in this box, in addition to when we get it, we get three themes being developed for Star. The first is Tully, and that's going to be the Rush build. What do you guys think about?
That's what they wanted it to be in 1.0.
That's what DC will be playing, lots of Tully Rush. You can mark it down now, gentlemen. Tully Rush.
There we go.
It's your card, Blackfish, that's going to push it.
I don't think I've ever played a Blackfish ever in my life onto the table.
Oh.
But do you think you would in second edition?
No, I still think I would.
Wow. Even with the card draw?
No, in second edition.
I've only ever played the other Blackfish.
Ooh, that's cold. That's like a personal insult.
Wow. No, Blackfish is a second edition card. It's a good second edition card.
Well, it was 1.0 and it was Siege, man. What do you want? Second edition, I totally agree. It's very efficient. It's awesome.
Yeah. Second edition is a great card. I don't know how much I love Cat or Deceptive, but Blackfish is a very good card.
Did anybody notice Frozen Solid? What the fuck? Yeah, it doesn't hit attachments anymore.
I was going to say, there's a few kind of aspects, kind of overarching things we're seeing here that I wanted to hit on instead of just throwing out a random name and then another name before moving on. So there's something about the Blackfish. Let's back up to him because we were talking about him for a moment there. Because there's
Let's pick it up next.
Wait. There's an interesting aspect here, okay? We're not going to analyze the Blackfish himself and how much he, you know, does or doesn't suck. Who knows? But I still hear the draw equals win. But what I'm curious about here or find very interesting is that we've got a champ card coming back, which is almost exactly the same as it was in first edition, or a very, very close translation. But this is going to be coming out in the Stark box. And as we learned about FFG's rotation scheme at the Worlds presentation last year, the core set and the deluxe boxes will not rotate out, while chapter packs will. And we've already seen two other champ cards being reprinted in this first chapter pack cycle. I'm just curious.
Everybody loves Eric. I mean, he's so beloved, they just couldn't rotate his card.
Does it seem weird to, like, give some champs that evergreen treatment and not others?
I mean, I don't think they did it on purpose. I think they're just trying to find thematic ways to jam in as many of these champ cards as possible.
Yeah, that's
I agree.
That's
I think they're trying to bring it back as fast as possible.
Nate will figure out a solution for that down the line. I don't think that's a concern yet.
Sure, he figured out a solution. We've got like 6.
Wait, what?
Go ahead, Seth.
Sorry. I was just saying, he figured out a solution. Make it cost 6, and then it's not good.
6 is good right now. I mean, I don't know if 6 is going to stay good. I feel like 5 is going to end up being the sweet spot. 6 isn't good right now.
All right, let's press on.
Well, that actually is a nice segue into the next point that I wanted to bring up, since we did hit briefly on Caitlyn as we ran on by there, and that is we see her as another 7-cost character, which I think cements, as if we weren't already fairly certain of it to begin with, but that kind of cements that a lot of these characters are going to be hitting that kind of cost range. But like, the more I build and play second edition here in this early range, you know, core set and, well, now one pack, I feel like it's really hard even now to go all in on those expensive characters, or even like half in on them. I mean, like, there's a few of them that I will go ahead and run. There's a few I won't because they're not worth it. But even with the good ones, like, you know, can I afford to run a 7-cost Daenerys and a 7-cost whatever else we get, full-grown Drogon or whatever? You know,
does the accelerated economy that they show you with this box change your attitude about that at all?
Well, possibly. The particular one they previewed kind of is a kind of a win more sort of thing. Hey, if you've been doing well and getting power on characters, you can go ahead and make them cheaper, which I think is going to be a trickier one in practice to make those really viable.
What was that?
Wait, hang on. Thrones is about efficiency. Like, Thrones has always been about efficiency. A 7-cost character has to be insanely powerful to be worth running. You will still see 7-costers when they are worth it at that level. You're not going to see a 7-coster like a cat who's just kind of okay. Like, you're just not. Or you shouldn't.
You definitely shouldn't see her and Eddard in the same deck, I would think, right?
Right.
Which seems really kind of counterproductive to some of the goals.
Well, there's another cat that you can see with that.
That's I don't see this card you're talking about where you're losing power and gaining money.
The Tully
it's
Septon.
The card. Septon?
Yeah.
There's an undersword. House Tully Septon, maybe a quarter of the way down.
Alright, I'm on it. Sorry, guys. Press on.
Okay.
No problem. So, I don't know. That was just kind of my general thought process on the kind of the theme there that we see.
Is it really win more? I mean, aren't there ways that you can force utilize this?
I mean, there are, but like I have to have the power on my characters. So, I mean, the times that I really want and need reducers to get stuff out on the board is when I'm not in a great position anyway. And the largest way to get power on characters is through Renown. Of course, Caitlyn is going to be generating some for you when you are behind and you're killing stuff to military claim and whatnot, but I'm just not sure that reducer...
Bannering to Baratheon for consolidation?
To kneel my own characters?
Kneel your own characters and then discard... No, stop it. Like,
Stop it.
You're going to stop being a bad player. We're gonna...
Yeah, you're trying too hard, man. You're reaching.
Yeah, Tommy.
Yeah, because you've never... You killed the wrong dwarf your own character before.
Let me ask you this, Tommy. How many second places have you got?
Like, not the same.
I only keep track of my first places. So.
Ooh, ow! Speaking of, can we? I know there's more to talk about on this box, but I feel like we should move on. Let Aaron crack on about this turn.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to preface this by saying this is Red Saturday. It's a yearly tournament in New York holds 48 people. And in my opinion, this is a really important tournament for where the meta is and what we can learn about the meta because they were using Taking the Black. It was a pretty big tournament. We have a lot of data on the tournament. And we know that there were players there who have been building and playing second edition since Gen Con. And that, for me, means that there's a lot of important information to come out of this tournament. So I'm really interested to hear what Aaron has to say.
Oh, well, for sure. Apparently because I have a huge ego, which is the prevailing opinion on it. I just have what deck I play it for a vote. And Lanny Rose won the vote by 2. In building the deck, I decided what I actually wanted from Rose. I decided I wanted 12 cards, the minimum, because Lannister's so strong. And the first thing you have to decide is whether you want those Olenna's informants, the ambush characters that give you an extra talent. And I decided what I mostly wanted was cheap cards that I could set up. I was originally running 2 Margaery, but she's one of the best characters in the game. Characters tend to stick on the board now, so I went up to 3. And once you have 3 Margaery, Randall starts making. No intrigue icon means he becomes a 2-of, not a 3-of, because Tears of Bliss is still everywhere, and you don't want too many dead draws. Randall ended up being absolutely incredible. The deck, it turns out, actually could very much use that extra renown outside of Tywin and Jaime. 2x Courtesan were almost in, but the lack of military icon meant they weren't good enough chud for blocking and preventing that win by 5, so they became 2 Burnmen. The rest of the characters were tiny little dudes that could just be there and help me set up, especially the 1 drop wing, who are some of the most important cards in the game. They are, once again, the refugees. Left and right were going to be cut, and Alex Hines hates them so much that I ran them just to annoy him.
I love spite decisions.
Worthy.
Yeah, they've won me a couple games. Like, they're a terrible 1.0 card and an excellent 2.0 card. Or at least a solid, good 2.0. Like, there's stuff stays on the board. If you have other things you can claim for, like, you shouldn't be running multiples, probably. But given that stuff stays on the board and Wildfire is still kind of bad, left and right are really good.
And you were at one per of each?
One per of each. But I saw them in something like three games. Like, once you see your big dudes, your summons and your counting coppers end up being just, like, bonus cards. And you can grab a right if you have a left, or if you don't need anything else more at that point, and just use it to slow the game down.
I really only have two questions about your deck. One, talk to me about berries. Talk to me about why you played two instead of zero.
Okay. Zero virus is not a choice. One virus is a wrong choice. Virus is, I've said this before on the cast, but I cannot mean it more. Varus is functionally a grenade that you're happier when you have. In my third round match, my opponent set up Tywin and a Chud and a Gold, and then he just functionally emptied his hand. I was going second, I played exactly one card, that one card was Varus. I won the game hand. That you need something to help mitigate those setups, and there's a lot of decks in the meta right now where if they get Varus, they don't have an answer. The deck just falls apart.
Well, so I'll return to Seth's question. Why didn't you run three?
I'm getting there. Three ends up being something you draw more than you want to see it. Two, the deck sets up fairly hard. I'm setting up four or five most games. And since the deck sets up so hard, I have a reasonable shot of seeing it turn one or turn two. The backup play that I never actually had to use in the tournament because the deck more or less rolled the way I wanted it to. The backup play turn one was to go counting coppers or summons to go fetch a Varus and then wait a turn while they play everything out. But I ended up having enough solid starts and strong enough starts that I didn't have to do it. And the one time I would have done it, I just drew back up into Varus after my setup. With three, you're too likely to see it on setup. It's a card you never really want to set up. And it's a card when you're trying to push for the win that you don't really want to see either. It's a solid top deck if you're behind, but it's a bad top deck if you're bad.
All right, fair enough. Okay. And the other question I had was about your events. You kind of had a smattering of stuff in there. Go over your event choices.
Removal is king. You did well at draft, right, Seth?
I do all right, yeah.
Yeah. Removal is king in draft, and a lot of this game right now is like a draft format. So you go removal for about five, I find is right. If you can run all six, but it tends to get hard to run space, and people at the moment are protecting fairly well against the tiers of lists. It's good if you can catch them unawares, not great otherwise. Tywin plus Jaime will push through or put to the sword against almost anyone. And Tyrion means you'll always have gold for it when you need to. Margaery too. Just all the little things that push that. Treachery is, I think, one of my two favorite cards in the game right now.
What's the
Hound.
Both nice. Stellar choices.
Yeah. Indeed. So, Treachery just shuts down almost every plan the opponent has. It'll shut down your Gaston. It doesn't shut down the defense spot, but it'll shut down your Gaston, it'll shut down your Seastone Chairs, it'll shut down your stands on Dany. Like, everything that really becomes a problem for the deck can be, as happened in the final, it'll shut down a Varus.
So, it's an answer, is what it's...
It's a cancel. Like, do you consider to be, I know it's Ursine, but do you consider it to be a Kraken, an answer, or just a good card?
I hate it to be a Kraken. I would never play that card. It's a new card.
Alright, fine. I forgot your DC. Okay.
Was Finger Dance a new card?
It is an answer, but part of the meta right now is having the right answers because the card pool is so small. In 1.0, you could never possibly answer everything. In 2.0, I don't know that there's anything in the meta that this deck, that could be thrown at this deck that there wasn't an answer.
I think it's interesting that you put the counting coppers in, and that works pretty well with Treachery. Treachery is a cheap event, and when you're counting coppers, you're happy to see one. It gives you, you have enough cards, so it gives you a little space to make a play. So I see what you're saying there.
It lets you bait opponents into things at times that where it benefits you more. And then, like, it swings huge, huge advantages out of tiny little events. Because the game can become snowballed, making those little advantages big board swings is functionally how you win right now. And was that my whole event package yet, right?
That was it.
So one mistake in the deck is things I do for love should have been in there.
Really? You think? Okay, I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, it's point and click removal. It's a phenomenal card. I expected to see a lot of hand judgment, and I didn't really want to commit to it. I saw almost no hand judgment. And Things I Do For Love is just an unreal good card right now. You don't have to win a challenge, you don't have to do anything. You have to save some gold or use Tyrion to get some gold and then just say bye to one of the best characters in every game. It's freaking fantastic. It should have been a 2-0.
I do love that card. And I'm glad, actually, to hear that you weren't running into the Hand's Judgment.
Hand's Judgment, again, meta call, but there's six events or so in every deck that you know that Hand's Judgment is going to be able to swing a game for. The opponent's been, like, overly pushing to get that military through, and you're just like, no. Their whole strategy falls apart. You win that game. I don't know. Like, I think it's a really powerful card. As much as I think it's powerful, I still don't run it. I still can't actually bring myself to run it. But it's got a place in the meta right now.
And Milk of the Poppy, you wouldn't, too.
I think Milk of the Poppy is a shit card. I cut it from almost every deck. However, this is the one tournament before Chapter Pack 2 comes out where I feel like I need an answer for Greyjoy being the new hotness. And Balon plus Seastone Chair, turn 1 or 2, before I see my shit, will just end my game. Will end my day. And great, like, new players have been moving in flocks so far in the game. Like, at first, Barrack Fealty was the hotness, and everyone played that. And then it was, like, Targ Fealty and Targ Lannister. And now that the first pack is up, what all I'm seeing is, like, oh my god, all these different Greyjoy decks that do the same basic thing. And, like, I don't want to lose to a noob who got a lucky draw. And Milk and the Second Widow's Whale, and Marjorie and a couple other things, the Hound, help, and Treachery. Mitigate that. And, like, in testing, I found I needed that Milk and have that extra, like, option of slowing that down. And once I did, like, I don't think I lost a master game.
All right, makes sense. Why don't you talk about, do you mind if we fast forward to your cut games, or do you want to talk very briefly about your matchups?
One more card I want to
talk about. How about plots?
Yeah, let's get back it all up. Sorry.
Sure. Yeah.
Wait, one more actual deck card I want to talk about.
Sure.
Seal of the Hand needs to be in my deck. Seal of the Hand is something that everything about 1.0 from the very beginning has said is a bad card. And if you're running, like, six Lords or Ladies and it gives you something, some different giant benefit with each, Stand was good in 1.0. It's unreal good when you have this level of impact there.
The Marge and Tywin, that's just a lot of good characters.
And Marge and Tywin, it's double stealth. Tyrion, which is hard to understate right now. Your Randall, even, like, you're getting three challenges that way out of Jink. Like, that's awesome. It's so much better than it seems like it should be. Alright, plot deck. Summons, Noble Cause, Confiscation, and March comes every single deck. Like, I don't have any decks that aren't running Summons, Noble Cause, Confiscation. Sometimes I run a second summon, sometimes I run Counting. In Lannister, it tends to be Counting, because they have so many ways to mitigate that low gold, and they just want to see good cards, because they have so many good cards. Other decks are more reliant on specific characters, so the second summon is the right call. It depends entirely. Calm Over Westeros is largely a mediocre plot, but New York, knowing the meta, knowing the better players in the meta, runs a lot of naval superiority and a lot of sneak attack. And summons functionally shuts those two down. Last spot in the deck is either sneak attack or calling the banners. Sneak was to push for a win, but too many things like Area of Hotel, little extra defense, so on, High Garden would shut that down basically completely. While calling the banners was too helpful for Varys and too helpful for when I needed some blood to close. So calling the banners ended up the last call.
Alright.
I think that's a very underrated combination, using the calling banners and Varys.
Shut up, Tommy.
It works great with sneak attack, too. It's just a little less consistent.
Absolutely. I think they're both fantastic.
Yeah, because Varys right now, it's hard to understate that he's a bit of a combo card. You've got all six of your neutral resources, plus you have calling the banners, so you need to get him into play. You play a plot where half a resource that doesn't, but if you're not running all those neutrals, then you're not running a plot that can give you six gold. Sometimes you just can't get them out.
Don't forget, if you want to play bad plots, you can play the one that is 501 because he's a lord.
That's not a bad plot. I run it in every single thing.
It's a bad plot.
I'm against you there, Tommy.
If your curve is good, you don't need that plot.
Yeah, okay. I'd rather... So, what I'm finding more and more...
Tommy, where do you live? You live in D.C.? What's
it? Oh, do you agree with me here, Seth?
I mean, the curve, the plot, I'm 50-50, but definitely the curve statement sounds a lot like something I might hear around here.
So
efficiency is important.
Efficiency is important. You can either run something like those mini-curve decks that, you know, what's-his-name swears is a mini-curve, help World's winner last year.
Sam?
Yeah, Sam, thanks. Lost his name. Like, you can run a mini-curve deck, and then you don't need anything of the kind. You're totally fine. But if you're going to run, like, look at my curve. I'm running six costers, counting dupes, the big seven coster, and then three of the five costers. And I need to maintain consistent board presence, because a lot of the deck is defensive, because there's no Valar. So, again, shit stays on the board. Renown matters. Renown sticks around. So, while you want to... there's enough variance and enough limited locations that that acceleration is wildly important if you hit a critical mass of lords and ladies. And I'm pretty sure everyone I named, plus Cersei, plus Margaery, are lords and ladies.
It's true, but I'm still not sure that you're that top-heavy.
Do you go that top-heavy in every house? No. In Lannister, where you have Tywin's plus two goals, and where you, like, functionally...
That's what I'm saying. For your list, I feel like you're not that top-heavy.
You need to get them in play. Like, I think at this point in the game, if you're going to be fairly top-heavy at all, like, the middle of the curve is cut out. It's all low and high guys, besides Cersei, I guess. Yeah. But it's low and high guys, mostly. I want at least two potential five-plus gold plots.
Sorry, Aaron, go ahead.
Yeah.
So,
I want
you feel like, I agree with you. I mean, looking at your deck list, the 501 seems like a pretty good include. You got a lot of lords and ladies, you have expensive cards like Tywin you want to get out, so I buy it.
I mean, the problem is, when you don't run that card, and, like, you can run, I mean, I guess you can run Taxation and 12 limited cards, but less than ideal, right? You're probably running 6 to 9 limited cards, and you don't have all those extra streets and shit. So, like, there's games where you're just not going to see much economy. It's going to happen. And you need a way to be able to not just die in those games.
That's fair.
All right.
Did you have the limited Lannister guy? Yeah, the merchant. You've got three.
No, I don't run him.
That's
I run the merchant.
He's the kneeler?
Is the kneeler, yeah.
All right, never mind. Press on.
Moneylender is the limited one.
Got it.
Yeah, the moneylender shouldn't be limited, but it's because this game sucks.
Because economy is not to be fun.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Given that there's no real way to punish overextending, so you have to slow down how fast people complain.
For sure.
So, but it still makes me sad because Lannister has a giant hole in that spot where they don't have a character they can run. Okay. So I started off 4-0, lost my last two games when I got pretty drunk with Sandy.
Oof.
Stopped drinking. I mean, like, I also continued my streak of only losing to, like, some of the best players in the world because I lost to Dark Nodge at a silly play where I said first when I meant second because it was about that time.
Dark Nodge claims if he had played you in a cut, he would beat you. Do you agree with that?
No, and he doesn't believe that because he's like, my deck, like, we tested our matchup 15 times. Like, I play Dark Nodge a lot, and his deck just generally doesn't beat mine. And my
so,
deck,
in other words, can we have a 7-game series to prove out?
Yeah, we can have that. We played more than 7 times. But, yeah, like, if I... John was like, all right, we're going to go to time. One of us is going to get a mod. You want to just take a tie? We both make the cut. We move on? And I was like, no, I could have just passed and taken a mod with
him. I do not believe that John Andrews. He's an honorable man. He would never see something like that.
Ask him. Like, because we were basically at time when we were about to flip plots. So he was like, you want to just take a tie and just call this a day? And I was like, nah, let's play it out. And I'm busy thinking about that, and, like, I'm still fairly drunk. And I was like, I'll go first. And then I went, oh, fuck, no. And he went, nope, you're first.
No takesy-backsies in a tournament, man.
I should have then passed and just been like, I'll defend, and I'll get the mod win anyway. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I messed up. I deserve this loss. So I just threw shit at him and hoped he messed up. And I told him, I was like, I'm just going to throw shit at you and hope you do something stupid. He's John in a tournament, so of course he didn't. And then, you know, he won. Say lovey. Shit happens. Again, at this point, I'm 4-0 and at the top table, so I'm pretty sure I'm being
better. Who'd you play round 6?
Stroms. So I played Stroms, and I set up poorly against his Martell Talani mini-curve thing. And he
what was going on with Stroms that he isn't supposed to get? Why don't you give us the goods, right?
It's the same basic concept as the Targ Talani from last time. It's running Gaston Grey. Like, same basic idea of deck. Like, a bunch of low-cost stuff, a bunch of high-impact plots, a bunch of removal. Like, he saw two things I do for love and managed to get me marched, and that was that. Like, he just rolled me that game.
Oh, he just got you early?
Yeah, there was no comeback. I ended up having a Varys. Like, I could have stopped him. He had a Tywin and a Tyrion on the board, and I had a Varys duped, and he played things I do for love with 6 gold on Varys. And I was like, oh, well, there goes that game. So I shot.
Can't he save? Oh, he just milled.
But then he would have just milled. And
yeah, I got you.
So one way or the other. And, like, my hand was small. It was just, by that point, we're dead. So, although in the round of 8, I played Stroms again. So there's, like, an hour between the last round and the cut where we take a break. We do a raffle. We thank everybody. We give prizes. You know, the whole thing in a big tournament. So I decided to drink some water, relax, sober up during that break. My wife recently yelled at me in a weird way, similar to Seth, how Seth yells at me. He's like, practice all this for tournaments, and then you go to tournaments, all you want to go do is drink and have fun with your friends. You don't even try to win. It's like,
yeah, the F.
Yeah. So I was like, all right. Like, I've got to, you know, play seriously. So I played seriously against Stroms. Instead of running into stupid plays, I played slowly. I played defensively. I got Tywin out, ended up with Randall and Marjorie out, and I just collected Renown, defended a bunch, made sure I saved some treachery, and closed. Final four was against Sean Emberley, the Thesaurus Rex, playing Greyjoy Sun.
Greyjoy noob deck, just like Sean loves to play.
Yep, I hate that deck.
Why is that?
Because I think Greyjoy is the current noob deck, and I don't like the current noob deck, whatever the current noob deck happens to be. So I got Marjorie out fairly early. I managed to get to see Tywin and the Hound, and from there I'm just building and stalling, making sure that to deny him as unopposed as much as possible. He's got all three of his stupid plus two reducers, plus two strength boosts, yeah, and keeps going first with Balon. So, like, oof, I'm baiting using Balon where I want him, and then stopping certain things with bouncing Hound in and out and bouncing Widow's Wail onto people. Eventually, like, he needs to win this power challenge. Like, I'm in fair control. Like, I'm closing this round. I need to go first. I don't have anything that's going to let me go first. His deck has every high initiative plot. So he ends up going first. He needs to win this power challenge. He can actually close, because Greyjoy, if you don't know, goes from, like, 9 power to 15 in one turn. Like, immediately. So he needs to push through this unopposed power challenge to do that. So he pushes, and I've been drawing, I've been holding on to this treachery for fucking ever, because he's Greyjoy. He's not winning enough intrigue to really threaten a decent-sized hand. Although, the one intrigue he won with Euron, he got my Lannisport. And, yeah, it was cute. So he's got Balon. I defend with, he doesn't have Great Kraken's give him stealth. So I defend with Tywin, who has, like, 6 gold. So Tywin's got enough strength to stop 2 of the, the plus 2 strengths, but not the third.
So you treachery.
Yeah, so I waited for him to do the first 2, and then I treacheried the third, and the look on his face as Tywin got that renown was pretty freaking impressive. Tywin then sealed to stand, and he pushed through an intrigue, which I did the math. Like, the intrigue will leave him at 14, and at that point, like, I can close on my turn. So he intrigues. I think I just defended with Tywin again to, like, win. And I'm either 1 or 2 away, and then he militaried with, like, functionally everything remaining, and I could easily win, and I had enough renown on the board where I just defended and closed. And, yeah, that was that game. Like, he was reasonably close to winning just because that stupid little late-game rush.
That's how, yeah, Greyjoy, they can...
Yeah, I felt in control the entire game. I never really felt threatened, except that, like, one mistake, you know what I mean? But I was fairly locked in, and Sean missed a trigger for Lannisport. He like, went to keywords, and I was like, oh, and I'm going to trigger Lannisport. I was like, no, you're not. And, like, it flustered him, and he feels like I rush him when I play, because, you know, that's what I do.
I would have already drawn, dude. I'd be like, I triggered Lannisport and draw, and then you'd be like, no, it's too late. Judge, I don't know what this guy's talking about.
The judges were sitting watching. Like, Dave was watching.
That's tough times.
So, that was that. Like, I ended up winning that game. And then the finals against Ian, who I played in the first round. He was playing a Targ Fealty, and I treacheried all his resources turn 1, so I basically rolled over him. And that was his only loss until the finals when he played me again. And he floods. He has, like, all his good stuff out. I have a Randall, a Marjorie, a bunch of Chud, but he has a better hand, so he plays Varys and decides to Varys. Yeah, I treacheried. So, I mean, I wasn't even 1,000% sure it was the right call, because he had no economy, so he wasn't able to play me the shit in his hand, and I knew his plot deck from the first game. I thought getting rid of Dany might have been enough, but at the end of the day, obviously, I'm happy I did treachery it. And so I just, I played very, very slowly, got left and right out. I played very slowly with Randall and Marjorie, collecting power slowly, making sure that I was first player so that I could pump Randall before his action, so that he couldn't Dracarys Randall.
Yep.
I ran a Tywin headfirst into a Dracarys on purpose, because, you know, you got to get him out of the hand and not lose him the renown at that point, right?
And he doesn't die, right?
No, Tywin. Sorry, Tyrion. I ran Tyrion.
Ooh.
I couldn't find a Tywin at all. Like, I was digging like crazy for Tywin. I just couldn't find Tywin at that time. So I ended up getting Jaime on the board and Randall, and, like, I basically played the game perfectly. It ended up being on the Periscope. Except the last round, I should have led with the military instead of a power.
I saw the Periscope. You can't see any of the cards, so it's...
Oh, really? That sucks. Okay. I played, like, I didn't make any mistakes, because I rewatched it knowing what... You know what I mean? Like, I knew...
Yeah,
what,
yeah, you know the cards, so...
But, the only mistake I made was last turn. I knew it at the time. Like, I should have led military instead of power, but I was so close to winning, I figured I was going to be extra safe. I was so scared of Dracarys. I had totally overlooked that his house card was no.
Who is he in? Where does he live?
Brand new Long Island player.
It's oh, nice. Player.
He beat Rit Fitch. Rit Fitch was his big one.
So that's a cool report. We went over your deck some, but there's still some questions I have about the rest of the cut field. You can see on the annals, they've got everybody who made the cut and all of their deck combinations. So I want to ask you some questions about that. Is that all right, Will?
Yeah, by all means. Let's hear a little bit more about this meta.
So looking at, let me pull it up here. We've got the annals here. Britt, I didn't know he was the one seed. Did he not lose any games? Did he lose one game?
Everyone lost a game. Britt ended up by the second tiebreak winning Swiss over Stroms. They both had one loss.
Okay, I see. So he's running, it looks like, a pretty standard Targ package, I would assume, plus good cards out of Tyrell.
It's the deck that, I want to say the, Jesus Christ, Jakob and so on played in the 2.0 tournament at Worlds.
Got you.
Okay.
So it's Buzz's build, I believe.
And then we talked about Greyjoy, we talked about Strom's deck, we talked about, how do you feel about Targ Fealty as an archetype?
I think it's worse than Targ to Tyrell and Targ to Lannister. It's got some fairly clear benefits. It sets up a little bit better, but it's, if you can either handle or control Dany, I don't think it wins. It's just people aren't really used to handling or controlling Dany yet. But once Dany is under control or dead, like, Targ Guilty doesn't have much else to do. Well, if you combo it, it's not so reliant.
How do you control Dany? You just milk or kill her?
Milk doesn't work great. You kill her or you, like, win challenges where she's in.
Yeah.
Like, you just count that one strength. Make sure you're doing your math properly. Don't, draw out their Dracarys. I can't, like, people will just not make challenges with their big dudes all game because Dracarys is there. You need to get rid of those cards. Like, you can't just be hostage to, Gaston Grey or Dracarys or whatever all game. You're gonna lose that way.
You said something online. You said you thought this was your third best Lanny deck. Is that true? You really think that you have two better combos?
Yeah. I think that, okay. Less so now. Alright, I think it's my second best Lanny deck right now. Like, I think it's better than the Barra deck now that I've played with the Barra deck a little. I was really hoping Lanny to Stag would win. Lanny to Stag is a really fun deck, but it has a lot more trouble playing Barriss, and that makes it good.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like Lanny to start.
What does that get you?
It gets you Arya's Stealth, and it gets you Brand's Cancel. And spoiler for anyone I play in the Octagon Tournament, I guess, I'm now running Eddard in it because I found the benefits of the extra Renown. And if I can sneak a couple extra Renown with Eddard, since I obviously have the gold because I'm running the same basic plot deck, like that extra Renown wins the game.
Renown does seem to be a lot more potent this time around as compared to first edition.
So, like, military doesn't matter once the board is reasonably flooded, like, at all. Unless you're going to try and get a put to the sword through. I mean, you win a military to get the Renown, but you don't, like, do it to swing the board state as a general rule. At least I don't. So what I mostly want to do is defend, collect Renown solely, and win power challenge. Then that'll close most games. And Eddard, you do all of that. So I don't think he's a good card generally, but I think in this deck he's a very good card.
And you think that Lanny, either of those Lanny decks, these two decks that you think Lanny and Banner or something, or your best two Lanny decks, you feel like that is the meta? Like those are the best decks in the meta, or do you just think it's a really close, really wild meta?
I think that every single house has a very good deck. I think Lannister, and I've been saying this since before, is the very best house and the very best deck. I think that we know what every house can do, and we know functionally, more or less, what every build is trying to do, and Lannister can stop basically every other deck from doing what it wants. And nothing can really stop it from doing what it wants, because all it wants is to win some power challenges and take its time. Slowly whittle away your board, whittle away your guys.
Do you think that it doesn't look from seeing like the rest of the cut was necessarily running Barriss, running things the way you would? Like, did you see those decks and think these are decks that are attuned to their capacity, or do you think there's still a lot of big gaps where decks are making the cut that aren't fully optimized?
There's a lot of not fully optimized decks making the cut. I still maintain that Wildfire is largely a bad card. There was one deck that was functionally, like the Lanny Stark that made the cut, Chris Lavin's deck,
yes,
was almost the same as my Lanny, was almost the same as my Lanny Stark, sans Eddard. So it's still a very good deck, and he only lost to Britt because they went to time, and had the game gone on, he thinks he would have been able to close. That's why you add Eddard, because you need that extra bit of Renown. So, because otherwise, like, if you don't see Tywin early, the deck has serious trouble closing because there's not a lot of renown there.
It's funny that both you and John have mentioned Randall as being really important and a really good card. And I had never, I just kind of looked past him. I mean, the stand is nice, the renown is nice, but I was never that intrigued.
So there's a lot of 1.0. My initial gut reactions for cards are very often wrong right now. Like,
don't admit that when we've been rating cards on the show here.
I don't rate off gut reactions. I've stopped and thought about the cards. I've played a couple games usually by the time we rate the cards on the show. Our original, first blush, when we went through every house, I hadn't played enough to probably know exactly where I was going. But, a lot of my 1.0 preconceived notions, and left and right are the easiest example in the world. In 1.0, left and right are the worst goddamn cards in the world, right? In 2.0, if they just stick on the board and you have other claims, so eventually they end up really shifting the board state, if only by denying consistent unopposed and letting you control what challenges and what power your opponent gets.
It depends, but I think the fact that you're not playing fire adds to how good they are, because you know you're not going to have to make a tough choice where you keep one of them or something else.
I mean, I truly believe Wildfire is a bad spot. I've been told so many times by so many people, it's got its place in this deck and that deck, and maybe. And maybe that's just not my play style. But, Wildfire is actively bad. And if you're drawing and you're not overplaying your hand, or you're making sure you have good characters that aren't just going to get eaten alive, Wildfire doesn't hurt you that bad. I got hit with Wildfire. It's just, it shit happens, and you replay out some stuff. That's why you've got the draw plot and the search plot, so that you always have more shit to go get, more shit to play.
See, I think Wildfire is definitely fine. It's definitely a very strong card in certain decks because the stat line is pretty good. If you're playing 36 characters like you were, and you're trying to build a big economy and get guys out on the board, and you're playing two Varus, you've checked a lot of boxes that make Wildfire a pretty bad choice. You're playing left and right, things like that. But because the stat line is, it's fine, and you can set it up. Other kinds of decks, I don't think it's necessarily bad.
Okay, the issue is, if you're doing reasonably well, it'll lose you a game.
So would Valor, and yet you champion Valor. I think it would be interesting to hear, for the listeners, exactly what you feel the kind of skill differentiator is between those two, or the situation differentiation.
Valor changes the game. Remember how much we were just talking about how important Renown is? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But that's not... Okay, so the...
Valor changes the game. Wildfire doesn't change the game. Wildfire amplifies the importance of certain cards, certain big cards, right? So you've got this giant board. Let's say you're playing, not even a fully ideal deck. You're playing Terelkis. And you've got Paxter, Marjorie, the Knight of Flowers, and what's his name? And Randall out. You're now killing either Paxter or Marjorie, and you're kind of fucked. Those are two cards that significantly help you win the game. And you know what? I bet you they're better than...
So why are you killing them?
You've just played Wildfire.
Because you played Wildfire. Because you were backed into a corner and you were forced to play it. Out of curiosity, in that same situation, were you forced to play a first edition Valor Margolis? Would you potentially be worse off?
You built the deck significantly differently if you're playing Valor. Valor changes the way you build the deck and the way Wildfire does. You still have to be able to do the same things with Wildfire, where Valor changes everything about deck building.
Is it possible then that the criteria that you're using is coming from, as you said earlier, kind of a skewed perception from first edition, and maybe you're looking at the purpose of how to utilize Wildfire in decks that do want it wrong? It's not a board wipe. I find it much more beneficial to look at it as a free, say, 2 military claim.
Again, if your opponent's good, it's a free 2 military claim where they can just reflip.
Regular military claim, too.
The only, which is, again, what did I just say I feel about military claim?
Yeah,
right now?
You still need to make it.
At the end of the game with John, we were both counting 38 strength on multiple challenges.
Oh my god.
Military.
That's a different issue with what the spread of stats has done to challenge math in the game that I think is an interesting but very different topic.
All right, if John were running Wildfire, I would have functionally crushed him. Like, I saw almost none of my cards early. I just stalled and waited and hoped I saw my right stuff. I didn't see Tywin until the second to last turn, which is ultimately what cost me that game, where he had a Randall with a Marjorie and a freaking Heartsbane on turn two. So, at the end of the day, like, if he was running Wildfire and I could change the math that way, like with Confiscation, with a couple little removal effects, without having to get through that giant army, I win that game. In Targaryen, the math changes because you have Fire and Blood and because you have, burn effects. Like, I've heard it's good in Greyjoy, but I keep playing Greyjoy Fealty because I like knowing how things work against, like, when we're testing, you know what I mean? When we were building for the term and I played a bunch of Greyjoy Fealty, and, like, I kept hearing Wildfire was good for it. And Wildfire kept being my seventh plot that I never really wanted to play.
How many plots did you go against, John, by the way?
Either seven or eight.
That was a grindy game.
But, like, that's what... I feel like it's so easy to turn the game into a grindy game right now.
Yeah, it is a grindy game right now. It's a lot like Draft. I think it's a fair comparison.
So, like, I mean, I don't want... I want a reset. Like, Varys, I think, does the job because I have a choice. And Valar makes it a different game. Like, my gold curve, this deck, it just isn't a deck that is even a thought when Valar exists.
Because you can never play Tywin if they have Valar unless you have a dupe. And it just sits.
That kind of thing goes away. Everything changes. The plots change. The math changes. Everything changes. Like, Valar makes for a different game. I think it makes for a stronger game, but I don't think it's especially relevant. Nate said we're getting Valar. There's no point really discussing, are we getting it, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So, fine. We're getting Valar. But where the game is now, I think Wildfire has a place in Targ and maybe Greyjoy. And most other places, you're better off with Varys because at least you have that choice and you're not costing yourself games with it.
So, coming out of this tournament, I guess to summarize, close up from this segment. Coming out of this tournament, you do feel like Lanny's the strongest house. There's a lot of strong, there are strong decks out of just about every house, but Lanny's strong deck, bannering into places where they get what they need, is the strongest. You, it sounds like, think Varys has a place in a lot of decks more than it's being played right now, and that Greyjoy is something you have to prepare for, but not really fear.
Agree. Yeah, that summarizes. Also, Trella's underplayed, and Barra Fealty remains really, really good.
Yeah, I saw there were no Barra Fealties in that top eight, and I don't think we were that many at the tournament, I guess.
No, like, it was one of those new player decks. Kaiser consistently complains about Barra Fealty, because he'll, like, badly outplay someone. He'll be seeing them make mistakes, and Barra Fealty is just a very, very friendly deck for that kind of...
Oh, look, I have Stannis. Yay!
Yeah, and, or, like, oh, look, Scene in Flames. Oh, were you planning on stopping that? Oh, well, now your guys know, and I have your best card. Scene in Flames is a little bit silly.
So, I mean, it's pretty much the benchmark deck, then.
No, I don't think so. I think Targ has replaced it as the benchmark deck. Like, I think that the best deck for new players is Barra Fealty. I think most new players are drawn to Greyjoy because they seem flashier with their kill effects and such. I think Targ is the, like, if you're good and you know what you're doing, you'll beat Barra or Greyjoy with Targ almost every time, and Lannister is a little bit more advanced. Like, you don't get to make mistakes, but if you don't make mistakes, you basically don't lose.
I mean, the way you describe playing a very defensive game is contrary to what people think they're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, boys. I actually have to run. I really wanted to. I'm glad we got this chat, though. I wanted to come on here because I felt like this tournament and the meta just wasn't getting enough coverage. People are talking about other things, but to me, this is like a microcosm of what we're dealing with right now, where the cards sit. So thanks so much, Aaron, for sharing your thoughts.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Seth. I think it was great to have you kind of prodding some of these issues that you found pertinent.
Yeah, thanks for letting me invite myself. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. See you.
Bye.
Well, I guess we move on to props and slops this week. Minor slop to timing and scheduling, kind of rushing us along a little faster, a little shorter episode than usual here, guys. But hey, sometimes a change of pace is good.
Okay, let's start with a prop to Seth for coming on. That was a really good segment, I thought. So thank you, Seth.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to guests kind of hopping up and saying, hey, I'd like to be on, and inviting themselves on.
Especially if you have a topic, if there's something you want to know, discuss, talk about, let us know.
Definitely. I especially like that because, hey, after a while, it gets a little more difficult to think of fresh topics on the show. So speaking of, I know I've had some other folks kind of had messaged us on Facebook about maybe being on, but we had difficulty ironing out a time with them being on the far side of the world there in the Philippines, I believe. So even if you're elsewhere, feel free to message us, and we'll see if we can work something out.
Yeah, props to the Filipino meta. Like, you guys are great guys. We're really enjoying all your posts.
Heck
all
yeah.
The community. Like,
they're crazy really active.
Yeah. So I've got all of my props are different community stuff. So you got anything else before I just start rambling about the
Yeah,
community?
No, ramble for a moment.
All right. Next props is to the guy, Seth's World's Weekend rival, Ryan Jones. Ryan just got a new position at work. And he's really excited for him. Props, Ryan. Way to go.
Nice.
Next, series of New York props. Props to Roy, Dave, and Ben for setting up Red Saturday. They're awesome. Props to Ian for, in his second tournament, rising to the top of a major, major tough field. Like, that is ridiculously impressive, and we expect great things going forward, Ian, so keep it up. Props to Amy Stroms. Amy Stroms, I don't know if you listened to Beyond the Wall because I totally didn't tell you this yet, Will.
Okay.
We're doing an episode of Beyond the White Book.
This sounds confusing, but tell me more.
It was prize support in New York where someone could, John and I both drunkenly decided, you could win being on a podcast.
Oh, okay.
And Amy Stroms, like, really wants to be on the podcast and she wants us to host it, so we get to do a dual podcast with Amy Stroms, who is one of the coolest people I know.
Okay. Well, yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. She's awesome. You're going to love her. And lastly, Patrick Haynes, world's second place graduate, would like to be on the cast, Will. So
yeah,
props to him, and let's make it happen.
Well, extra props. Actually, I saw him posting on Facebook recently about wanting to write articles and maybe looking at starting his own blog. And I asked him, actually, if he would just like to write for the White Book site. And he said that would be great. So I think we're going to have a regular series of columns coming from Patrick on the site as well.
Yeah. There was one more, but it's gone. So go ahead.
Well, let's see. Along with that, I want to prop the fact that it's Christmas season again. I'm one of those folks that I don't want it to start early, none of this October stuff, but the instant Black Friday hits, I'm all about it. Love the music, love the decorations, love, of course, as it were, the reason for the season, tend not to delve too much into political and religious things on the show, but it is my faith of choice. And just in general, I'm pumped for this time of year.
Yeah, more community stuff. There we go. I'm going to prop my friend Alex, who is not Mr. Hines, who does feel better, in case you were wondering, since he was dying like Monday. But props to my friend Alex, who just a math teacher who just joined the game. He's thrown himself full-fledged into it, playing on Octagon and everything. Went 2-4 in his first tournament, so not bad at all. Welcome aboard, Alex.
Nice. Well, let's see. What else should I prop on my side? It's not quite a prop, but by the time you listen to this episode, there will be a little bit of time left on the various auctions that I was throwing up on eBay. There's cards for various LCGs and some lots of some CCG and LCG stuff for Thrones. Different bling goodies, promos, and whatnot. Trying to both clear out the apartment because it's tricky to fit myself and Kristen into a one bedroom for the moment, as well as make extra money to put towards the wedding. So if you've been on the fence about anything, come bid in the last day or two and help me get rid of some stuff.
I want to actually slop something that you're not going to really like, Will, but I don't know if you've been paying attention. I'm going to slop the Card Game DB forum this past week. Like, chill with the negativity, guys. Really, like, chill with the personal attacks. It'll be okay. It's a game. We're fun. We're friendly. We don't do this. Take it down a notch, please.
Yeah, I've been skimming it a little bit here and there and kind of been thinking that I ought to post more in the forums. So I've been trying to pop in and out here and there. So.
I've got a job for you, Will.
What's that?
Can you get us 1,000 likes? Because I'm sad that Beyond the Wall has it. We never push our Facebook, so we're lagging behind.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of that was the changeover. We had, you know, quite a few on there. It was 700 or 800. I hadn't looked at the old page in a while. So it definitely set us back starting
from zero?
From the beginning. Yeah. Okay.
Well, push it, Will. Push it.
Okay, well, while we're pushing it then, I also do want to push the contest that we've got going on Facebook. If you saw me post about it on there, sorry that I'm running over it again, but I'm stealing an idea from another show, friends of our show, Cardboard of the Rings, the Game of Thrones, the bi-weekly Lord of the Rings LCG podcast, which actually talks a lot about Thrones Second Edition these days. But anyway, they recently did a meme contest, and it sounded like an absolute blast. So we are stealing that particular idea and doing the same ourselves. So we're asking our listeners, come up with your best Game of Thrones winter-themed meme and email it in to contact@whitebookpodcast.com. I'm asking you to email in your submissions, preferably in JPEG or PNG format, so that we can post them in a gallery on Facebook ourselves, so that names and such are not biasing who's voting for what. We may even come up with a couple of our own to throw in there to make things a little spicier about what you're voting for. So you have then until, let's see, I believe December 14th, we're opening up submissions. Just go ahead and dream up whatever you want, be it on Game of Thrones card art or shots from the show or one of your standard memes like The Most Interesting Man in the World or Confused Fry from Futurama.
One that's a meme.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a submission in that is Aaron himself. Bonus points from us if it's something about the podcast. So you've got until December 17th. Then we're going to throw them up in a gallery on the Facebook page. We're going to ask listeners to come by and like their favorites up until December 25th, where we will close down voting. And the winner is going to get one of the Ygritte deck boxes from the Winter 2014 kit from last year.
I'll throw something in there, too. So, like, we'll have, because I obviously am sick of votes after last week, like, my favorite's going to get a prize, too. I'll send out.
Okay. Aaron's personal favorite gets a prize.
Yeah, I've got an extra playmat from something or other. I just found a second playmat.
Nice.
So we'll toss that in there.
Yeah.
I think it's regional season, maybe.
I'm looking forward to seeing some more. We've got a few public ones that have been submitted that I'm probably still going to go ahead and include in the gallery. But remember, email them in so the usernames and personal names and such don't influence voting.
Hey, also, and apologies for me because I was super hungover Sunday, so I'm fairly behind. Please continue to send in winning deck lists to Whitebook Podcast. It is on the page, whitebookpodcast.com. You can find the under tournaments, submit winning deck lists, continue to do so. Mine and the other, like 6 to 8 that are ready will be going up probably this Sunday. Again, apologies for last Sunday after winning a tournament and then drinking and singing all night. It wasn't happening.
Well, that's fair.
Props to Banter Behind the Throne, because those guys are awesome. I don't really have any specific reason. I just like them and I follow them.
Yeah, they're pretty entertaining for sure. And I had a good time hanging out with David World. So
put me in the song, so it slaps too.
Well, I've actually got a little bit of extra slop, still podcast related. That's going to be to a little bit of the just menu construction and layout on our own site. It's bugged me for a little while now that it's that I was maybe trying to throw too much info and different things out there in front of people. So I've been kind of asking some different folks for some feedback and kind of working out some ideas to make it a little more user friendly. So be on the lookout. Things may rearrange a little bit as we go.
Cool stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and hopefully then the end point is that maybe it will be easier for folks to submit events. Still trying to push the event submission system there. Had three more submitted today. So if you are a tournament organizer or otherwise in charge of keeping your group or meta up to date, hop on, submit events on the site there so that people have a nice, centralized, easily searchable database.
General props to New York, we're the best meta. Come at us.
There you go. I got nothing after that. I'm not coming at you.
And thus, something, something, white book.
Closes another chapter of the white book. Danger zone?
Nah, no danger.
No danger.